Welcome back. Dan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dan.
Okay. We're at step two, which is came to believe that a power greater than ourself could restore us to sanity. And I have to be clear what my insanity is before I can come to believe that I even need a power greater than myself to touch it, right? You know, but the book showed me how to look at my alcoholic insanity, right? The thinking that takes me back over and over again to that first drink. And the idea that over and over again I tried to manage my life around me and couldn't set that life up in a way that brought me to a place of being satisfied enough to stay happy or sober with my life, right? So the book entitles this chapter 4, We Agnostics. And that's where I look at step two. And it's interesting because sometimes I've worked with, a lot of times I work with people that are believers. Right? Sometimes they have a lot more religious education than I could even begin to talk to them about. Right? So I don't talk to them about that at all because it's really not about what I think they should believe in. Right? So I do have, though, some basic instructions for this paragraph. I'm sorry, for this chapter. And that's, I tell them to go through the whole chapter and underline everywhere where they can see they didn't rely that there was a power. Whether didn't rely that there was one that existed or one that they could use. Right? You have two different kinds of people coming to this thing. You got those that absolutely don't believe that a power can work in their life, which was the direction I came in, and you get the believers. They can tell you everything you want to know about God, right? Even what God looks like. But what they all have in common is when you go through your life and look at where have you not relied that that would work on the, where have you not relied on that power to work in your life, right? That's where the believer and the agnostic or non-believer come together. Obviously, if I really trusted and relied on this power, then I wouldn't be in this situation to begin with. So even a believer has to acknowledge that. So going through this, it brings up a lot of questions. You know, I grew up with certain situations that happened around me that developed my lack of belief in God, right? You know, I spent about 5 years in England. My dad was English, and when I was about five, we moved to England. And the schools there were much more religious than the public schools were in the United States. They had morning prayer, and during the holidays, they'd march all the kids to these churches that were around the school. They'd make us say prayers and sing hymns and do all of this stuff. And the churches were much different there, too. I mean, here, I don't know about Kentucky, but in Los Angeles, where I live, real old is early 1900s. real old is late 1800s, right? I'm sure here it's got to be older than that, but that's what I was used to as far as what old meant. But in England, old is, you know, 1500s, 1600s. You know, that was old there. So the structures were the really elaborate churches with really elaborate windows, and it was really, really high ceilings that just make you look up and go, ah, oh, you know. And I'm sure it was part of that was designed to make you feel that. But, you know, but the way my life was is, the home life was pretty tough. You know, sometimes my mother would come pick us up at school with her face wrapped in a scarf, dark sunglasses, and you know, and it wasn't because it was England and because it was cold. It was to cover the black eyes and the bruises on her face, because my parents didn't get along very well at all. And I remember coming home and and listening to them argue and watching them fight and seeing all of this stuff and going to bed and remembering all of this stuff that they were telling me in school and I remember asking God just make them stop fighting and stay together, you know. And God never listened to me. I see that as a good thing now, because to keep two people together that were in whose relationship was in that condition would probably have not been good. Right? I mean, one of them may not have lived through it. Right? So early on, I got the idea that there was no God that really worked in my life, and developed ideas that pretty much people that believed in God were weak, delusional. Right? When the people would come door to door and knock on our doors, and you know, and mom would yell, you know, hide, so that they couldn't look through the window and see anybody's home. Right? Develop these ideas that this stuff was a bad thing, right? And that we should avoid it at all costs, right? Which wasn't hard for me to do because it's not easy to believe, right? It was easier for me to believe in something that I thought that I could depend on. So what did I think I could depend on? My own thinking, right? My own reason, right? That's what I always depended on, is my abilities to get myself through the world. And to make the decisions that I thought were right for me, right? Even at the cost of it not being right for somebody else. In the middle of 47, there's a paragraph that says, we need to ask ourselves but one short question. Is do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? I think the key to this for me was that you didn't tell me what to believe in at first, or at all, actually. Didn't tell me what to believe in. And through step two, I believe that it's not really about coming to a conception of what God looks like or what God is, but what have I always relied on? You know, there's a lot of different religions in the world. Right? And a lot of them call God, God. And the only thing some of these have in common is that it's a power that they rely on. So using that definition in my own life, I was God. Because I was the power that I relied on. Right? And look at what a great job I did. Right? And after seeing step one, to ask me if I'm willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself, right? I would have to be in a place of hopelessness to say, I still don't believe. Because if I really see that if I keep going the way I'm going, that nothing was going to change, then I have to hope that there is something other than me. And it was just a willingness to believe that there's something more that was necessary at this point. I was told I didn't have to understand it. I just had to understand that I needed something more. Because if I see the powerlessness of step one, and it's to the degree that I see the powerlessness in step one, that I have to be willing. Right? The more powerless I am, hopefully the more willing I could be. Right? Which goes back to what I said before. If I'm not too powerless over what I'm looking at, then I don't have to be too willing. Right? But it's the degree that I see that powerlessness is going to be the degree that I need more power. But it brought up a lot of questions. It's like, you know, how am I going to figure all of this out? Because I'm still trying to use my mind. I'm still thinking I'm going to have to explain what God is and figure out which one is going to work and which one's the best, right? and there's too many to choose from, and very consuming, very confusing prospect for someone who absolutely doesn't know which direction to go with this. Right? But I was encouraged to see that we haven't even got to the point where we're making a decision we want to do something about it yet. We're just looking at the idea of, what have I relied on to this point to restore me to sanity? And that was only me. You know, I was more willing to believe in things like science, right? And even Bill talks about it here, where he says, in the bottom of 48, where it says, everybody nowadays believes in scores of assumptions for which there is good evidence, but no perfect visual proof. And does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? It is being constantly revealed as mankind studies the material world that outward appearances are not inward reality at all. To illustrate, the prosaic, which means plain ordinary, the plain ordinary steel girder, is a mass of electrons whirling around each other at incredible speed. These tiny bodies are governed by precise laws, and these laws hold true throughout the material world. That means that's what this desk here is constructed of, the microphones or bodies, right? Electrons whirling around at incredible speed, right? Scientists tell us so. Teachers in school told us so, right? You know what the interesting thing about this is, though? When they wrote this book, they hadn't created the microscope that actually saw this stuff. Scientists told them it was true, and everybody just believed it. Right? But when you bring up the idea of God, since we have no reason to doubt it, when, however, the perfect logical assumption is suggested that underneath the material world and life as we see it, there's an all-powerful guiding creative intelligence, right there our preferred streak comes to the surface. And we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it isn't so. I told you I turned statements into questions, and turned all of this into questions. And like, did I laboriously set out to prove that there is no God? Right? The arguments that I'd have with people, how delusional they must be. Right? Yet, scientists hadn't even seen this thing with the electrons, and I'm not even going to question it. Right? I have a lot of... I came to this program with a lot of prejudice against the idea of God, a lot of prejudgments. Right? And I wasn't willing to even look at this being so, that there really is something that'll work in my life. Right? But I had to go through these pages here to really get a picture of that and see that. And it's... I had this problem. All of you guys look like you were believing in God. God kept me sober. God's given me this. God's done this. God's done that. And the little voice in the back of my mind is just going, they're full of shit. They're lying to me. Right? They're just trying to sound good. Right? There's no such thing as a God that's going to work in my life. And that's how it's from that little voice in the back that I lived my whole life, right? Thinking that I'm all that I can rely on. Right? I told you I used page 52 in each step, in the first three steps. If you look on page 53, it says this. So when we became alcoholics, when I really see step one, crushed by a self-imposed crisis that we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? So for there to be a choice, there has to be two options. And right, and for me to make that choice, I got to consider both options. So when I get to this point when I'm sponsoring someone, I pose this question. I pose the first option. I have them go back over page 52, middle of 52, the bedevilments, and ask this question. And it's nothing different than what they've probably been doing all along, no different than the way they've been living, with the idea that what if there is no God? And the little voice in the back of your mind that says there is no God is true, and that all of you people are wrong. Right? That's the first option, that there really is no God. And I have them go back and in meditation consider all of these things, saying, what if there is no God? And those things on page 52 are, first, we're having problems with personal relationships. And what if that little voice in the back of my head that says there is no God is true? What if there is nothing more for me to get than what I've ever had? Right? What if there's nothing more that can come into my life and change anything with personal relationships, love relationships, family relationships, employee relationships? What if there is no more power for me in that direction than what I have or have ever had? What about with my emotional nature? What if that little voice in the back of my head that tells me that there is no God is true, and there is nothing more that'll help me with that way that I think, right? The way my emotions control my life. Not necessarily sometimes outwardly, sometimes the worst emotions that are controlling your life are inside and nobody sees them. Right? What if that little voice in the back of my head that tells me that there is nothing more for me than what I've ever had, you know, when I'm sitting in misery and depression in a dark room, just not caring about what's going on, thinking, you know, feeling trapped in this abyss. What if there is nothing that can pull me out of that? Nothing that I could turn to? What about making a living, a life that I'm content with? What if there is nothing better for me than what I've had? What if there is nothing more? No power to turn to, because that little voice in the back of my head that tells me there is no God, maybe that's true. Having a feeling of uselessness and full of fear, the fear that controls my life, and being unhappy and not being able to be of real help to other people, I ask them to go home and to sit with this in this contemplation for a few days. Right? And some people make it a few days and some people don't. Right? What if the little voice in the back of my head that tells me there is no God is true? So I meet with the people that I work with once a week. We set a day and a time, and every week it's in my schedule. And a few days before we get together, we look at the second option of that choice. What if the little voice in the back of my head that I've always lived by is wrong? And what if there is real power that will work in my life? Right? You know, then what would my relationships look like then if there was something more that I could tap into than I've ever had in the past? With my emotional natures, what if there is more power for me? With misery and depression, I go through all of these things on this list here in the middle of page 52, and I ask, what if the little voice in the back of my head that controlled my life up until this point is wrong? And I can rely that there's more power for me. Right? Then I make the choice. You know, what is my choice to be, that God is or isn't? God is everything or else he's nothing. God is either everything or I'm everything. God either is or I am. Right? What is my choice to be? And it says after that, it says, arrived at this point, we're squarely confronted with the question of faith. Because I still don't know what that means for me. All we're talking about is power. Right? not, you know, whether I'm going to continue relying on my own power or whether I'm going to trust that there's going to be something else. And now it says I'm confronted with the question of faith. Because I still don't know what that all means and how I'm going to get it. I just know that there better be something, otherwise I'm in trouble. Because nothing's going to change. So it goes on to talk about, on the bottom of the page, it starts to talk about faith. And just the word faith bothered me. Right? Because I thought I couldn't really have faith. But hadn't I had faith in money, in people, in things, and worship? It talks about worship. You know, worship is a word that used to make me angry. You know, because to worship a god, right? Yet, hasn't my life been basically constructed of the things that I worship that I needed to be okay? I've always had the ability to worship and have faith in the things that I thought I needed to be okay, but they were always money, people, things, my own reasoning, my ability to handle situations on my own, right? So I just never really had the idea that I could possibly have faith that there was something other than me, right? But in the situation that I am, being clear on step one and seeing that I need more power and I haven't had enough to keep myself sober or manage my own life, right? The idea that maybe there's more power for me to use gives me hope, right? It's not about staying powerless. It's about accessing power. So, please turn to page 60. I start reading from page 58 and how it works to start looking at step 3. And I know I'm skipping through a lot of this, but it's not a lot of time. If you are of that kind that are more obsessive like I am, there's more information on my website, thejwalker.com. And there's going to be more stuff because I'm planning to do some basic things you can just download and give you an outline of the basics. And there's some obsessive stuff on there too. ever hear anybody in a meeting say, I don't know how it works or why it works? Right? Well, there's a whole chapter to how it works. So, but we're going to get more specific in a minute as far as how it works and why it works. On page 60, there's the ABCs. It says that, A, that we're alcoholic and could not manage our own life, and that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Right? I saw that in step one. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. Right? Isn't that step two? Right? And if I am convinced of those three things, it says we were at step three. And from now on in the book, it's going to tell you what every step we're on. And that is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? It's the how and the why of it. And they're going to tell us that on 62. It says the first requirement, and a lot of people didn't know that there was a requirement before taking the third step, but the first requirement is that I be convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success. Now, I told you I go through page 52 every time and through every step. And so now I go back through page 52 saying, how far has self-will gotten me in relationships? Relying on my own power again, right? how far has self-will gotten me with my emotional natures, with misery and depression, with all of those things listed. And I go through and I consider what self-will looked like in each one of those areas. Right? So the first requirement is that I'm convinced that any life, that my life, run on self-will, could hardly be a success. I couldn't do any better than what I had done to this point. Right? And Bill uses a story, kind of like an actor trying to run the whole show, to kind of illustrate how we play God in our life. It says, each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. I could see that I did that my whole life, trying to arrange everybody around me just to get what I needed out of life. Changed cars, changed places to live, changed businesses, changed people that were around me. If I thought someone was causing me grief, not ever thinking that maybe the problem was inside rather than outside, right? People continued to bother me, and I continued to change people around me, and things continued to get obsolete. I continued to change things around me. Always trying to arrange my life to find some place of comfort. What I like to do is start at the very last word on 60 and start personalizing the next page. Right? Where it starts off with if on page 30, the very last word. And I read it like this. If Dan's arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as Dan wished, then life would be great. Everybody, that means you guys, including Dan, would be pleased. Right? You'd be happy if I was happy, wouldn't you? Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, Dan may sometimes be quite virtuous. Now, here it describes me. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. Can you relate to that? Yeah? But if I don't get the right reaction out of you, on the other hand, I can be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. So as with most humans, Dan is more likely to have varied traits. So let's look at that another way. If Dan's arrangements at work would only stay put, if only those other people, those other salesmen at work in the office would do as I wished, then the office would be great. If Dan's arrangements with the clients would only stay put, if only the clients would act like I wanted them to act, then work would be easy. If Dan's arrangements with his wife would only stay put, if only she'd do what I wanted her to do, then the marriage would be good. If Dan's arrangements at that meeting would only stay put, if only those other members would say what I wanted them to say, then the meeting would be good. Right. Thinking that I know what's right for everybody around me, and if you just did it the way I thought you should do it, right, then everybody would be happy. Right? What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well, and Dan begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. Now that could be a problem, because when I'm not getting what I need out of you, and then you get more of me, trying to get what I need out of you, right? He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play doesn't suit Dan. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, Dan is sure that other people are more to blame. They're doing it to me. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is Dan's basic trouble? Is he not really? Wait a second. Let me ask you guys a question before I read this next line. Who thinks they're a people pleaser here? Who would be a people pleaser if they weren't going to get anything out of it? Right? Because the truth is, a lot of times I'm doing things to make you happy so I get the response I need out of you. It says, is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Right? Because if I'm not going to get the response I need out of you, I'm not too interested in being in what you want out of me. Is he not the victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Now, if you don't understand the word rest, substitute it with wrestle. Because rest means force. And wrestle comes out of that word, force. Is he not the victim of the delusion that he can wrestle satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I only manage right? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things that Dan wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is not Dan, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? So now it says I'm a producer, trying to be the director and an actor. So I'm trying to play all of the roles. In the next page, 62, it says selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. See, any fourth step that doesn't show you that this is true for you is going to somewhat fall short, because there's instructions in the book that will make this come alive. Because the selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble, we'll see that in our selfish, self-centered false notions in the third column, right, where it talks about seven areas of self: self-esteem, pride, ambition, security, personal relations, sex relations, and pocketbook. And then it says, we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And that's the fourth column, right? But the interesting thing, if you look at the fourth column and you're looking at fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, there's some important things to see in that. And one of them is that if I can see that my fears set up a condition conducive for the delusions, right? The delusions set up, delusions drive my thinking, my attitudes, right? My self-pity, right? And my selfish attitudes result in the actions, my self-seeking actions, right? And I have to see how that drives the thinking in the third column and gives power to the thinking in the third column. Most of us live in a third column society. Everybody not going beyond what looking at the effects of how, the effects of how I react to the things that people do around me. Right? Never get around to looking at my part in the situation. Looking at myself and seeing that the fears that drive the delusion that result in the thinking that end up in the actions I take that cause me to be in a place that I lack neutrality. But this isn't a four-step workshop. And I get really obsessive with those. Because one of the things that I have to see is, the six and seven, there's not a lot of paragraphs in there, but I start step six from the paragraph before where it says this is step six, right? Where it talks about reviewing the first five proposals, including the fourth step. And what I'll see is, obviously, any list that you make of character defects is going to look like actions, my actions and my attitudes, right? But it says two things on the first paragraph of the fifth step, and that is, talks about seeing our character defects in the fifth step, but it also talks about seeing the nature of those defects. And I look at those as two different things. My defects of character or my defects in behavior is my actions and my attitudes, the things that I'll see in my what I write next to self-seeking and self and my selfishness in the fourth column. The nature of those defects are the fears that drive the delusions that set up the condition conducive for the thinking and the action. I can work on my thinking and I can work on my actions, but I cannot work on my fears and the delusions. That's what I need to turn be to get out of the fourth step. That's what I need to see, that I need to turn to God for help with. So the because of the time, I'm going to jump down to the last paragraph of 62. Remember I said that we were going to talk about how this program works and why the program works? It says this is the how and the why of it. All right. First of all, they're going to give us the how of it, and then they're going to give us the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Right. That's how this works. I have to see that I have to quit playing God. And why does it work? Because playing God didn't. Because it didn't work. It's pretty simple, isn't it? So now you know, now you never have to say, I don't know how this program works or why this works. And now it says, next we decided hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be the director, he is the principal, we are his agents, he is the father, and we are his children. Here is the third step decision. The decision is not in the prayer is an affirmation of the decision. And it gives me three aspects of one relationship with God to consider. How much time do we have? Plenty? Okay, good. I like hearing that. I don't know, dinner's coming up, but
43 minutes.
Pardon me?
You got
43 minutes.
43.
Okay. I could fill it, but dinner's coming up soon, isn't it? I'm sorry? At 5:30?
30 minutes.
Okay. We should be fine. Don't worry. Okay, this talks about the actor, director, father and child, principal and agent. Now, I can really simplify the third step decision for you guys, right, by just using those three aspects of the one relationship. And we look at, what does a director do for an actor? Right. Director tells the actor what to do and the actor does it. So here's the first question. How good a job have you done being the director in your life? Directing your life. One thing you hear people saying is, well, I did the third step and I took it back, and I did the third step and I took it back. There's not much to take back here. Right? Directing my life got me to where I am. Right? Losing my business, losing my marriage, losing everything that was important around me. That's what directing my life brought me to. Right? There's nothing to take back here. Right? So the question here is, hereafter in this drama of life, can I be at a place where God is directing my life and I am just like the actor? Let God direct my life. Let is the wrong word. I don't mean to say let. I mean, I have to be in a place where I'm willing to rely that God can direct my life. Right? The next one is the principal and the agent. Now, an agent is who the principal would have them be, right? Usually a principal is either the employer or, so the question here is, how good a job have I been making you be who I would have you be? Right? I'm playing God here now, right? I haven't been able to make you be who I would have you be. Now here's a bigger question, and that is, how good a job have I been at making me who I would have me be? And I see that I failed with that too. So here on in this drama of life, you know, God must be the principal, and I'm just the agent. Right? I will be who God would have me be. I will allow you to be who God would have you be. Right? And not try to control that. The next one is the father and the child relationship. Typically, the father is a provider, and on the text in the next page, it'll validate that description. So the question here is, how good a job have you done providing what you need in life up to this point? And I see from what we just looked at in the first two steps, I need more power. I need more power. I haven't been able to provide what I need on my own. Right, so the decision is here on in this drama of life, I will rely that God will provide what I need. Right? Again, these are considerations I send people home to look at, right, and consider for a week. You know, what would it look like for you to continue to direct your life, to try to make people be who you would have them be, or to be who you would have you be, and just depend only on providing what you need? Right? As opposed to the alternative. Right? It says, one thing you hear people saying is, well, I did the third step and I took it back, and I did the third step and I took it back. There's not much to take back here. Right? Directing my life got me to where I am. Right? Losing my business, losing my marriage, losing everything that was important around me. That's what directing my life brought me to. Right. There's nothing to take back here. Right. So the question here is, hereafter in this drama of life, can I be at a place where God is directing my life and I am just like the actor? Let God direct my life. Let is the wrong word. I don't mean to say let. I mean, I have to be in a place where I'm willing to rely that God can direct my life. Right? The next one is the principal and the agent. Now, an agent is who the principal would have them be, right? Usually a principal is either the employer or, so the question here is, how good a job have I been making you be who I would have you be? Right? I'm playing God here now, right? I haven't been able to make you be who I would have you be. Now here's a bigger question, and that is, how good a job have I been at making me who I would have me be? And I see that I failed with that too. So here on in this drama of life, you know, God must be the principal and I'm just the agent. I will be who God would have me be. I will allow you to be who God would have you be. Right? And not try to control that. The next one is the father and the child relationship. Right? Typically, the father is a provider, and on the text in the next page, it'll validate that description. So the question here is, how good a job have you done providing what you need in life? Up to this point. Right? And I see from what we just looked at in the first two steps, I need more power. Right? I need more power. I haven't been able to provide what I need on my own. Right? So the decision is here on in this drama of life, I will rely that God will provide what I need. Again, these are considerations I send people home to look at, right, and consider for a week. You know, what would it look like for you to continue to direct your life, to try to make people be who you would have them be, or to be who you would have you be, and just depend only on providing what you need, right? As opposed to the alternative, right? It says, most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Now, I look at a concept as kind of like a concept car. Right? You can't have the car yet, but it's a vision of the way the car could look like in the future. right? So it says that these ideas are simple, and I think I pretty much simplified it for you into three questions, right? But it says that this concept, this vision of a new way of life, is the keystone. And the keystone is the center stone in an arch. And I picture that arch over a doorway, right? And we're going to be walking through this doorway, right? It's this keystone, is this new and triumphant arch through which we'll pass to freedom. So this is or concept of a new way of life through this doorway that we're going to walk to find freedom on the other side. And I try to avoid jumping back and forth as much as I can when I'm working with people, but this is one place that I think is really important to look at. What does it look like on the other side of that doorway? Right? What is this concept of this new way of life? So turn to page 87, and you're going to see a reference to some things that is just a decision in the third step, but it's a way of life later on in the 11th step. And I think that this is the core of the 11th step, right? So many people think that the 11th step is about morning prayer and nighttime prayer, right? Where the book specifically talks about bringing this into all of our day, right? Bringing God into all of our activities. This is a relationship, right? And what kind of a relationship would you have with your girlfriend or wife if you only said good morning in the morning and good night in the evening and no contact during the day? There'd be no relationship, really, right? You know, but what kind of relationship would you have if you brought that relationship into your whole day? Right? And it says here, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. It's because I trust that God the Father will provide what I need if I turn to Him. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. God's directing my life now. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, Thy will be done. God's the principal, I'm just the agent. I will be who God would have me be. In the third step, it's just a decision, right? But it's a decision on a way of life, right, that I'm working towards. You know, this thing is not just about staying powerless. This is about finding a relationship with a God of your understanding and what you're comfortable with, that you can actually trust and rely will bring power into your life. Right? And all of that stuff was pretty overwhelming for me, who came to this thing as an atheist. Right? So it was really important for me to hear some of the little stories that you might hear. And some of them are corny, and some of them are, well, they're all kind of corny, I guess. But, you know, like you got three crows on a fence. One decides to fly away. How many crows are on the fence? Still three. One just made the decision to fly away. You're just making a decision on a way of life here. Right? And we haven't really discussed or taken any action on what it's going to take to get closer to that relationship, right? And I don't believe it's about getting more of God. I believe I was born with as much God as I'm ever going to get. But each step is designed to chip away another chunk of me. Right? And the fourth step will certainly chip away a lot of big chunks of that. Right. There's the third step prayer here, and a lot of us a lot of people have come to think that that is the third step decision. But there really is no decision in the third step prayer, right? And you could say it as many. You could say it every day, and for some people it has very little meaning, right? But if I can understand why I need it, right? If I don't think I need to find this power, then that the third step is talking about, and if I'm not willing to make that decision honestly or humbly, then the problem really isn't even in the third step. Because if I don't really think I need this power, then maybe the problem is in the second step, and I didn't really come to believe that I need a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity, and I still have the idea that I'm going to be able to do something about this on my own. And if that's true, then the problem really isn't even the second step. Because if I don't think I need more power to restore myself to sanity, then it just takes me back to the first step. Because I still have the idea that I can manage my life and do something to keep myself sober, and I don't need more power. Right? So you'll see that the first step drives every step that comes beyond it. You can roll it back like that all the way from step 12. It all comes down to understanding that alcohol could kill me, right? And I can't do anything about that. On the top of 63, it says, when we sincerely took such a position. I mean, and that's what I believe sincerely taking this position means, right? That all sorts of remarkable things can follow. You know, sincerely taking that position is really believing that I need to find this power and being willing to do that. It says, we had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed. A new employer would be the principal, right, that we talked about in the paragraph before. And if we kept close to him and performed his work well, that's the director again, performing his work well, and established at such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves or little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. What would God have me be? That's the principal and agent relationship again. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, feeling new power flow in would be because God is providing me with new power, the provider, God the Father being the provider. Right? And that comes back, goes back to like Freudian psychology. So it's interesting that they would call the father's role a provider, right? So that mother is love and nurturing, and the father is a provider, right? As we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. And we began to lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. So all this stuff sounds good, but if it's not followed up by anything, any work to get this, then it's somewhat just... There's a difference between having the will to do something and having willingness to do something. I look at will as an attitude and willingness as an action. And when I work with people, I try to explain to them how I consider those things different, because what they talk about, what they have the will to do, is different than what I see them do sometimes. Right? So, and sometimes you have to take someone back to the first step to review why am I here. Because if I really believe that I need this more than anything, then I'm set up for what it goes on to say at the bottom of the page, where it says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action. And that's the fourth step, but I'm going to end here, because this isn't the fourth step workshop. So thanks for sitting through this. Thank you.